Yeah, I mean, our next question was actually sort of what you thought about the authorship controversy surrounding the last 40 chapters and how that might affect your reading of it. What have you thought about that when you approach the text?
That's a YA question. She has thoughts.
Well, I'm sure you do too, Eileen. In fact, I think we are pretty much in agreement on this. So just on the level of reading, I have to say that I sense right away that this is a different author. Mm-hmm. People have since then used a lot of digital tools to find out whether choice of words or specific turns of phrases can prove that. I think that you can feel it right away. We don't even need to make it an academic argument, right? It's a different author. And it's also an author with totally different concerns. So some very prominent people have believed that it's Cao Shuqin's own words. I think Lin Yutang, for example, and then more recently, Bai Xianyou. So you have scholars who writers who really believe that. And, you know, they can have their reasons, and that's fine. But I feel there is a different voice.
I think for me that I think I teach on world building and storytelling, and so one of the things that we joke about is that this is the first prominent fan fiction, right? I mean that I agree with Wai that the tone feels different, the concerns feel different. I feel like the last 40 are much more invested in the everyday, the world of the courts, the world of men. Rather than the world of women, even though a lot of prominent plot happens in the last 40, right? The whole extratextual, like when you read as a kid, what you know about as a kid are actually a lot of the scenes from the last 40, right? Like Dayu's death and stuff like that, or the marriage ruse, things like that. But in fact, Jia Baoyu's father is more prominent, I think, in the last 40. He has more interiority. Like, there's more thinking about him as a character, whereas then Wang Xifeng kind of fades out. And so I've always thought that you see that this is a author who truly loves his source material. So if you want to think of it as Gaoge, like someone who really, really is a fan. So that's what I mean by fan fiction. Like someone who really is constantly troping or referencing the way good fan fiction is, right? But sometimes you're almost doing it a little too much, right? You're like, you're proving the point. You're quoting you're quoting the good quote. You're using the right color of the dress, you know, but you're really just kind of referencing the first 80, kind of prove what a good fan you are, that you know this so well. But I feel like the emotional concerns feel different, and maybe that's where Wai Yi and I really agree, right? That it seems to be about, I don't know.
So Eileen, I have to say he got a lot of things right, and I think you're totally right also about the very self-conscious recapitulation of plot points. You notice how many repetitions there are of references to things that happened before. But one thing he did not get right is the color of the dress.
Oh, okay. Yes, I stand corrected.
Because I think it was in one of the later chapters that Lin Dayu wears, is described as very beautiful. And in Chinese, it's Yangfeisa de Shuhua Qun, an embroidered skirt with the color of the consort Yang, with this 8th century imperial consort. But really what it means is a certain shade of pink. So can you imagine Lin Dayu in a pink embroidered dress?
That's a good point.
Now you know exactly why I like talking to Wai Yi about Dream of the Red Chamber. Yeah.
You make a great point about Zha Zheng, though, because when we're talking about like Wai Yi, I think you said that when you think of a character, imagine something they did, like sort of use that as sort of a focal point. When I think of Zha Zheng, it's when Bao Yu gets in trouble. I think it's because he flirted with the maid who dies. And he doesn't fully know the context of what Bao Yu is being punished for, but he almost beats Bao Yu to death with bamboo. And compare that to where it ends when, you know, Bao Yu sort of reveals himself to be a monk. And he just sort of accepts that. Like, there's a sort of smiling resolution to this, like an acceptance. That feels like a completely different character to me at that point. And it was surprising to me, but I never sort of put together that maybe this Zha Zheng shift kind of happened in those last 40 chapters. And that was a turning point for where that character came from.
I love that. You're such a careful reader. And I think so. I feel that just, you know, even though, you know, I love to shitpost about Jiajun, frankly, but you know, he's such a goofball in a sense of the most in the first 80, right? I mean, the way he beats his son to death, he's horrible. He likes to show off his son during the whole, the garden walk, right? Like the yes. naming, you know, yeah. So he's seen as such a kind of hypocrite. But in the last 40, you gain a kind of sympathy for him. And I think when mm-hmm. we gain sympathy for characters is suddenly because you sort of understand their motivation a little better. And suddenly you see him worrying about his family, right? I mean, worrying about the finances mm-hmm. and the downfall of the family. And then, yes, at this kind of reconciliation. So if you want to imagine that, a lot of people will say Cao Xueqing finds his, if you imagine that he wrote the first 80 and he found his sort of fictional alter ego in that kind of, you know, Madame Bovary, c'est moi kind of way, that it was Lin Daiyu. Like Daiyu is in some ways his person, right? Because Daiyu is the writer, but Daiyu is filled with this kind of the fall of the family. And, you know, I don't think Bao Yu is actually, you know, the author's alter ego. But the last 40, I feel like Jiajun is kind of the author's alter ego. So I kind of wonder if, you know, if we imagine it to be Gao or somebody writing, if somebody who is much more in tune with what it meant to be a middle-aged guy. I mean, I don't know, like to be part of the world of the courts or the world of having to manage a household. I don't know. This is just a sense that I've always felt about the first 80 and the last 40.
Well, someone who is interested in what it means to be a scholar official as well, because it's really only in the last 40 chapters that you see what it involves to be an official, that even if you don't want to be a corrupt official, you force into making a lot of compromises and so on, and you pity his helplessness, but you also see his dilemmas. Then that's a world that the author of the first 80 chapters is not that interested in. But I do have to say that even in the first 80 chapters, there are moments when I think we're supposed to feel a kind of sympathy for Jiajun, because if you recall, before they move into the garden in chapter 22, Bao Yu has a kind of moment of enlightenment. He's joking with, I mean, he gets into a tiff with his cousins and they're not paying him any attention. And he decides that he would embrace Zen enlightenment. Remember that episode? So in that same chapter, Jiajun looks at some Lenten riddles that they're putting forth. And he all of a sudden feels this deep sadness because he can see that they all portend very bad things. So mm-hmm. why do you juxtapose a kind of hint of the end of Bao Yu embracing religion and so on with Jiajun's moment of intimation of bad things to come? The author is really trying to basically up to his usual tricks, giving you a sense of the end when you are just at the beginning because they haven't even moved into the garden, but it's also a moment of bringing together father and son to show this secret affinity almost. Mm-hmm. And when he parades him in the garden, I think a lot of for a lot of students, it's hard to see that this is the way a Chinese parent is proud of his son. It's like parading him, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they think that he's unduly harsh, but actually so secretly pleased, obviously. And so there's a little bit of that. And the beating, I grant, is horrible because then you see that he really has no connection with his son. So in the end, when Bao Yu bows to him before he goes off into the ether, is linking up to those earlier moments of affinity, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think that maybe that comes with that acceptance that he doesn't have. Because, Eileen, you coined him as a hypocrite. Another thing with that beating scene is after he beats Bao Yu, Granny Zha comes out and starts like yelling at Jiajun. And immediately Jiajun's like, "Oh, how could you be so mean to me?" And his like son is like right, a bloody pulp on the side of the on the side of the steps, you know.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, but this is true of all the men in the story, right?
Yeah.
Every single, there is no redeemable straight guy in this movie. I mean, I was just telling them that I was recording another podcast this morning about a reality show, but nobody. right? They either escape, they either escape their worldly duties, they leave it to their women folk, they stay, they're lecherous, they're evil, they rape and pillage. I mean, it's a range, but it's a very narrow range of basically villainy or incompetency. Tea leaf? Incompetency, right? Tea leaf.
Yeah. What about tea leaf? Is tea leaf, tea leaf's good, right?
What do you think?
Tea leaf is an extension of the master in some ways. You know, he is he is the page, so he articulates what's on Bao Yu's mind. Like when they go off to offer sacrifices to Jin Chuan, to Golden, then he's the one saying, "Oh, my master, he maybe in his next life he will be reborn as a girl," and so on. So he plays a kind of stock character, a kind of comic role. A servant who articulates what the master cannot articulate. And in some ways, it's not really a full character. It's just there to, on the side. Point. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I meant like all the men who have power, right? So, I mean, little bit of power. So like the you know, the terrible brother, the ship, you know, so they're all kind of, or they evade power, right? I mean, so one of a way is refusal, right? Like, so they're trying to find immortality, or they're trying to become religious, or leaving. Whereas so Wang Xifeng, even though we think she's a villain, because she is, she does some horrible things, but you see that she's trying to make do with the resources that she has, right? Both in terms of financial, but also emotional and moral ones, right? This is her world, and therefore she needs to make this world work. But I guess the what you were saying about the scholar official understanding in the later chapters is that you suddenly see Jia Zhen also trying to make his world work. Right? You know, so he has to, it's a limited range of ethical choices, but he has to make it work in that range. But, oh, so I love that you think, you know, this is actually in our reading group, this became a point of contention, because the whole, is this really a Chinese parent way of praising one's children? Or is this just outright terrible? But like, I kind of agree with you, because frankly, this is how my parents, you know, praised me. Like, you know, they would never praise me, but you know, in the sense that they might show me off a little bit in front of other people.
That's true. But this American way of saying "I'm so proud of you" would sound totally weird in Chinese. In fact, I can say it in Chinese.
I know.
They didn't used to say it in, I mean, could you say it in a 19th century novel, "I'm so proud of you"? I just always find that rather strange.
Yeah, I don't think anybody says, yeah, no, that's right. That doesn't...